This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Everybody get ready for Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis. A foodie born and bred, my wife Nikki loves chatting up chefs, dining out, and insider industry buzz.
And my husband David thinks a great meal is nothing but a good burger, a frosty brew, and a chef for under $20. Because he is cheap.
Well, maybe so, but Foodie married Beast anyway, and together we've got the food and wine variety show that has everyone talking.
It's Foodie and the Beast, and we are on now.
Hey, everybody, welcome to Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis. Not cheap, just careful.
It all depends on how you define
and
careful.
It may be a crappy day out there, but we're all jacked up. We got some great folks in the studio. So, he's a former tennis pro who must have enjoyed service, as a pun, because he's currently one of the hottest chefs and restaurateurs in the world, with over 40 restaurants all over the world. And according to Restaurant and Hospitality Magazine, he's the head of one of the 25 coolest multi-concept companies there are. And he's Chef Richard Sandoval. And he's nothing if not a multi-talented multitasker. And he's with us today to talk about Toro Toro, which is his newest restaurant here in D.C.,
Right, and we can't wait to hear all about it.
Are you holding me back there? Huh? What are you doing?
Yeah, I'm telling you I'm going next.
You're touching me. All right. Well, I like that.
Okay. I don't have to touch you.
Go ahead. Please do.
Okay. Lazy chefs alert. We have pastry chef and prop stylist Paul Lowe. He joins us today. You may know his fantastic publication, Sweet Paul. He's got a new book out called Eat and Make. It's charming recipes and kitchen crafts you will love. We'll be talking to him later on the show. And I don't know if anybody here knows it, but we are at the end of March, but it was National Nutrition Month. Did you know that? Did you? Any idea?
Yeah, that's why I had that donut last
night. I know. Plus, plus. Well, so we thought, given that we should all be in good health and good shape and we eat so much great food, that we should really talk about how to stay our fittest. Right, honey?
Yeah, I'm just looking at him. Right?
So we have with us nutrition guru and health expert Steve Hayes. He's going to tell us all about the Hayes Way. We're going to get a little fitness in studio today.
Am I doing this one?
Have at it.
All right. The Reading Connection is back with us. They're the folks who connect at-risk kids with the delights and interests that the world of literature delivers. And Courtney Kissel, who's their executive director, is in with Michael Muller, who is the assistant manager of Arrow Wine and Spirits. And they're talking about Of Wine and Words 2014, which is coming up this Friday, the 4th. And it's a big fundraiser celebrating the Reading Connection's 25th anniversary.
Which is very exciting.
Candles.
Everybody should clap for that. 25 years is amazing.
We're not going to be spanking
like
them, are we?
No.
Okay. It's too bad. I like that.
It's not that kind of show.
All right. And over on 6th Street near the Verizon Center and our friend Mike Isabella's place, Graffiato, Flight Wine Bar is the place for great wine tasting and tasty bites. And co-owners Kabir Amir and Swati Bose are in with Chef Bradley Curtis, who's a
Who's up there?
Who's
he's cutting
veteran.
And
he's
doing,
at a mini
he's
bar
making stuff
and
going on.
Listen, this guy's been everywhere.
I know.
He even helped open DGS. Did you bring any chicken liver, baby?
No. But I
all
can
right.
Them up real quick.
But Kabir and Swati, come on up to the mic. Tell us about Flight.
We're a neighborhood wine bar. We focus on bringing in lesser-known varietals and regions, focusing on boutique producers. Our goal is really to be able to provide wine at affordable prices and have people come and explore
now
and be
you're
adventurous.
You're playing my
well,
song.
Let's talk about, I mean, a little bit of your both of your backgrounds. I mean, how did you both get into wine and why a wine bar? Like, you know, 10 years ago, a bunch of wine bars opened and then that trend sort of slowed down a bit.
Sure.
So how did you decide to open up a wine bar specific as opposed to a restaurant?
We got into wine about 10 or 12 years ago, just loving visiting wineries. All our trips were wine-focused.
Don't knock the wine over.
So, you're saying you were winos.
I guess,
okay.
Yes.
All right. It's all right. We're all friends here.
But it became a serious hobby, and then I started studying it. One of the things we fell in love with on all our trips to Europe specifically were these neighborhood wine bars, where wine doesn't have to be a special experience necessarily. It can be an everyday thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's sort of what we wanted to create. We've been passionate about it for a long time. We wanted to do it for a long time and then, you know, woke up one day and said, life is short. Let's do it now.
That's terrific. So just for people who don't know, what would you characterize the difference between a wine bar and a restaurant? Because you do serve food.
We do serve food. Our food complements our wine.
Okay.
So we're heavily focused on the wine aspect, and then everything else has been built around it. Mm-hmm. And we've been lucky enough to pair up with Chef Bradley Curtis, who creates a lot of delicious food around our wine.
So are they small plates, or
they
is it
are
full
meant,
courses?
They're small plates meant to be shared. We've got some not-so-small plates, but everything's meant to be shared in an exploration of flavors, just like we do with wine.
Okay, so what are you guys going to put together for us first?
So we're going to start off with a sparkling from Vouvray. Mm-hmm. Again, you know, great sparkling values outside of Champagne. This is 100% Chenin Blanc from Catherine and Didier Champalou. Mm-hmm. And we'll pair it with our savory cheese plate.
Okay, that sounds terrific. Thank you. All right, start pouring, start passing.
All right, well, let's start talking to Richard Sandoval.
Who is sort of behind the small plate concept to begin with, because when you opened Zango here, how many years ago?
I think Zango's about 10
years old.
10 years old,
right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
10 years ago, that was sort of one of the first small plate concepts to hit D.C.
Right. I mean, and it's funny people say that, but I mean, if you look at the way we've been eating for hundreds of years, it's always been about sharing. I mean, in Mexico.
You haven't eaten with my husband. He doesn't share with
He them, doesn't really. Share.
No. I resemble that remark.
Yes, you do.
Yeah, but it's funny you said that, but, you know, growing up in Mexico in my grandmother's house, I mean, every day we ate, it was a big platter. She'd sit at the head of the table and then pass everybody a little bit of food, and it would be trays after trays, you know, seven, mm-hmm. eight courses. And that's the way I love to eat. I mean, you know, today I think you go to restaurants and people want to order, you know, three, four small plates per person. So your experience, now you're eating 12 plates if you're at a party of four, which before it was appetizer, entree, and dessert. That's it.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's go back to the start there because, I mean, was it your grandmother's table that inspired you to become a chef? Because on the way you were a tennis pro. How did all that happen?
Right. Well, I mean, I wanted to be a professional tennis player. My parents were divorced. I moved to California to play. Played in college, then played the circuit in Europe, and at one point, you know, I wasn't making any money. You know, you have to be in the top 100, and I wasn't making that, so I either had to go teach tennis or find a new career. And then I sat down, I was in Europe, and I said, well, what do I love? And I've always loved food, you know, from a small child. And I think growing up with my grandmother, at a very young age, I was already getting my palate developed. You know, my grandfather was a banker, and so, you know, being 10, 11, 12, they had imported cheeses in Mexico, which nobody had. Mm-hmm. So I always had these big, big parties, and I think my palate was already being developed. So I think that's where I had a head start of a lot of chefs is, you know, today, you know, a lot of children, you know, you ask them to eat a scallop or a shrimp, and they almost throw up. You know, but I
You haven't met our kids.
Or mine.
Step on their foot and their mouths open. <though.
laughs> So, yes, so growing up around food, and then my father was a restaurateur, so I decided, you know, let me go to culinary school. So I went to, you know, enrolled in the CIA, graduated from CIA, went back mm-hmm. to Mexico, worked for my father for about 4 years, opened a restaurant for him, and then moved to New York 17 years ago, and that's when I started everything.
Well, when you went to New York, your restaurant was what, Savant?
Savant.
Yeah. And, I mean, you just went and opened a restaurant, or?
No, actually, it was...
Yeah, everybody just goes and opens up a restaurant,
that's,
especially,
you know,
in New York City.
Your bio's a little light on what happened after tennis. You went to CIA, and then you suddenly you're...
No, I went to Mexico, worked for my father for about, you know, 4 or 5 years, and then a co-student of mine that went to CIA with me was in New York, working at the Quilted Giraffe.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I remember that restaurant.
It was a very famous restaurant. Then he worked for David Boulay. And he said, well, why don't you come to New York, and, you know, let's do a small restaurant together. And I remember driving around Manhattan and... I mean, no one would lease me a space. I mean, it was impossible because, wow. You know, restaurants are risky, and if you don't even have one, landlords don't want to let you. So I ended up renting a shoe store, you know, building the tables, you know, from the shelves. And
so did you sell your first dish with sole?
did I what?
Your first dish was sole.
Don't even ask him to repeat that.
Get it? Sole.
No, it was stupid. Don't repeat it. Okay.
So. I like Richard because he laughs. She's heard all these before. So that's – and it immediately successful?
Yeah. I mean, it was – yeah. I mean, and it's funny. I mean, it cost me $100,000. My rent was $2,500, and I was going, how the hell am I going to pay that much rent? You know, today, you know, you spend $3 million. You don't
right,
even
so
blink.
Different.
Yeah, it's such a different, you know –
Well, so you go from this restaurant, this little restaurant in New York City. I mean, now you have over 40 restaurants around the world. How did that – I mean, I think a lot of chefs or chef and restaurateurs would look at what you've done and be like, I mean, how did you do that? It's so hard to open up a second, a third, but then to take them all around the world. How do you maintain quality? How did you start the process, and how do you keep it?
Right. I mean, they probably think I smoke a lot of crack or something. You know,
right. You would be the first one to admit that in studio. Go ahead. Wait, can I put that on Twitter?
Wait,
Leo, are you okay? Leo, can I put that on Twitter?
You're saying you're supposed to smoke that stuff? No wonder.
That's the only way you can do it.
I've been rubbing it on my forehead for years, and not a damn thing happens.
Well, a little has happened.
Make my hair go away.
So it was kind of almost a dominant effect. I mean, it's never been about a number. You know, people always ask me, well, how many do you want? You know, this year we're opening, I think, 10 more.
Good Lord.
And it's just, I mean, I love what I do. You know, you met Yvonne, my director of operations. Mm-hmm. He's a wonderful kid. And it's also about giving everybody opportunities under me because, you know, with a big company, you know, you have over 1,500 employees.
It takes a lot of trust, though, because, you know, you're not in Dubai right now and somebody better be doing it right.
But, yeah, it's all about systems and having structure. You know, we have two corporate offices. We have one in Denver for finance, and then we have one for operations here. It's all about the people. It's not really about me. I mean, it's about having great people. I mean, Yvonne started with me as a food runner. Mm-hmm. You know, 10 years ago today, he's a partner in 5 restaurants.
Right, because you got one in Serbia with him, right?
We opened and one here called Ambar, which is Serbian food, yeah.
Right. Well, so given that you opened here 10 years ago, I mean, you're one of the first sort of outside chefs to come to D.C. and open up a restaurant here. Maybe you and Charlie Palmer, I think, came at the same time.
Right.
I mean, now every chef nationally, internationally, everybody wants to open up a restaurant here. What did you see in D.C. then? And, I mean, can you give a little, now that you've opened up so many more restaurants, how have you seen it change?
Well, you know, a lot of it has to do with Yvonne, too. I mean, he's here, so he's always bringing opportunities to the table. And, you know, for example, Denver, you know, I have 7 restaurants. So I think when I go to a community and they embrace what I do, you know, then I prefer to continue doing stuff in that community than going to different ones. So I think, you know, Washingtonians have really enjoyed my food. So, you know, and I think, you know, we'll continue to do, you know, stuff here. You know, we love D.C. and, you know, we've done very well here.
Well, let's talk about your new concept.
Yeah, let's get to Toro.
Because you have Toro Toro that's opening. Did it open Friday or it's open Monday?
It opened, Friday night. We had a soft opening, but, you know, the real opening is supposed to be on Monday.
Okay.
That's an amazing concept. I mean, it's a pan-Latin, what I call pan-Latin steakhouse.
Okay.
The first one opened in Dubai 3 years ago. It's the best Latin restaurant in Dubai.
Mm-hmm. Are there a lot in Latin restaurants in Dubai?
They're booming right now. Like out of every 4 restaurants that open, 2 are Latin. But Latin food is exploding around the world. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think it's probably one of the most popular foods.
When you say pan-Latin, what areas are you covering?
It's all South, Central America, and then I may throw a little Asian in there too, and a little curveball. But, you know, this concept was developed because the chairman of Emirates Airlines, who's a partner of mine, you know, did a flight from Dubai to São Paulo and hit it at Churrascaria. And he said, well, I want, in my new tower, I want a churrascaria. You know, can you help us develop it? And so, you know, are you familiar with churrascarias?
Mm-hmm.
You know, my problem with churrascarias is once I go there once, I don't go back for 6 months because you're so overstuffed.
Right, with all the meat carving and all that
Yeah, you
kind
turn
of
the
stuff.
Card green or whatever. Right. They don't stop carving food until you just keep eating. And all of a sudden, you know, you're so stuffed, you know, by the time you walk out of there. So I developed a menu based around a churrascaria. But instead of a buffet, we have a small plates menu, you know, to be shared with ceviches, empanadas. You know, like some smoked swordfish, like you see right here, some beef tartare.
I better try this.
Right.
I really better.
And
I
think, go ahead.
You know, and I think also, you know, steakhouses, you know, if you make them women friendly, I think they'll be more successful because women don't want to go to a steakhouse late at night and eat a steak.
I am actually offended by that comment.
Yeah?
I am. I would eat a steak any... I don't want that now.
Okay.
I would eat a steak anytime, anywhere, and nothing is more offensive to me when the waiter says, and would the lady like a filet? I want to stab him. I want to stab him. It makes me angry. I'm
all right,
sorry.
Go ahead, Richard.
No, but
here,
you know,
just
I mean,
eat something. Be quiet.
You know, I can't eat steak late at night. I mean, I personally can't because I won't sleep. And I think the way people are eating today, I mean, they're also eating a lot lighter and a lot healthier.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, a lot of people have cut down on red meats. So this menu was developed. You can have a ceviche, and then you can share a skewer for two with a little bit of beef. So you can have a little bit of a taste of beef at the end, and not just have to have a full-blown steak.
There. That sounds perfect.
Okay, we have to take a quick break.
Yeah. We'll be back after I wash Nikki's mouth out with soap.
This is David and Nikki Nellis with Foodie and the Beast.
It used to be.
This is Mark Amtower. If you're looking for cost-effective and efficient methods for marketing your products or services to the government or to other government contractors, look to LinkedIn. There are over 400,000 members in the D.C. area and more than 92 million nationwide. But only a small percentage actually use it well. I can show you how to leverage LinkedIn in ways that support your marketing, sales, and business development efforts. I do this for large and small companies, and I can do it for you. Drop me a line at mark@federaldirect.net.
Join me, NFL Pro Bowl linebacker Lorenzo Alexander, at the annual Bethesda Big Train Celebrity Softball Classic to benefit youth ball fields on April 12th at Shirley Povich Field in Bethesda. Come out to meet myself and other Washington Redskins of the past and present to take on Washington, D.C. area media managed by former Redskin Chris Cooley. For more information, visit bigtrain.org/celebritygame. Big Train is a 501c3 charitable organization.
At UPS, we take two things very seriously, your budget and our planet. It's why we've built one of the largest alternative fuel fleets in the industry. It's why we offer eco-responsible services like carbon-neutral shipping and carbon impact analysis. It's also why businesses trust UPS to provide customized solutions that cut costs and boost productivity. UPS is committed to helping you operate more efficiently and sustainably. Learn more at ups.com/gov.
GovEvents.com is your one-stop shop for government and military events worldwide. With hundreds of event organizers posting their government and military-related conferences, trade shows, expos, webcasts, and more, you'll save time and energy using GovEvents to find events to attend, exhibit, or sponsor. Search for government and military events by date, location, keyword, organizer, or focus. It's free, so join today. GovEvents.com. That's GovEvents.com.
Hey, you're back on Foodie and the Beast with David Nellis and the genteel lady like Nikki Nellis. And we're talking to Richard Sandoval. Richard, I guess one of the questions in general about D.C., you know, D.C. was a small southern town. You can name on one hand the big restaurants, and then there was the power dining age. I mean, how have you seen, I guess, our palates really evolve here in D.C.? I mean, you know, because it's way more than steak. It used to be steak and ribs and Chinese food.
Well, I mean, as you bring more talent, more chefs, you know, I mean, you create more options, and then, you know, people's palates are exposed to, you know, different foods, and they just keep evolving. And so, now, you know, once you do that, then, you know, you have to keep raising the bar, and more chefs keep coming here.
You think it's, I mean, people are traveling more. Since World War II, it's just gone straight up. I mean, the world is smaller, jets fly farther and all of that. Is that part of it, or are we just, you know, kind of getting our act together?
No, absolutely. I mean, until you can turn a computer on and look at any kind of cuisine from anywhere in the world. I mean, right. You said, you know, with technology, the world has become smaller, and before you didn't have access to any of these cuisines.
I was going to say access is the biggest difference today.
Ingredients. And,
well, let's talk about Toro Toro, because you said there's a club downstairs.
Right.
So let's talk about it. You're going to have hot DJs, and you got a bunch of parties planned. Let's hear a little bit about that.
Yes, does it matter if they're hot?
Absolutely.
What, the DJs?
Yes.
Yes. Of course it matters.
You're not going.
Oh. Okay. I am going.
It's an ultra lounge. And, you know, talking about DJs, I mean, I think music has changed a lot, too. I mean, before it was live, now it's DJs. I mean, mm-hmm. in Las Vegas, they get paid $300,000 per night to play one gig.
Right. You guys doing the wrong thing.
I tell my son, don't cook. Become a DJ. So it's important to have, you know, good talent. And if you're going to do an ultra lounge, you know, you cannot just think it's, you go there, you put a speaker, a turntable, and you start, you know, spinning music. I mean, we have a company called Skylight, and we have social media. You know, we hire girls to promote the party. So you got to have the infrastructure if you're going to do it right. You cannot just, you know, put music, a couple lights, and think, you know, you're going to get full.
All right. Well, let's make sure everybody knows where Toro Toro is. What's your address?
It's on 13th and I Street in the Franklin Building, you know, right where Franklin Park is.
Franklin Square.
Franklin Square, exactly.
Okay. Right. Chef Richard Sandoval, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
All right. So let's go back to the guys from Flight. That was some good bubbly, yummy bubbly.
So, Bradley, why don't you tell us a little bit about how you're working your cuisine to complement the different wines that you guys are pouring at Flight Wine Bar?
Well, my background, I grew up in the Northeast, so I've got a traditional New England background, but my studies have been primarily in Mediterranean cuisines. So I've had experience in a lot of different types of cuisine, a lot of different, you know, flavor profiles.
Mm-hmm.
So working with all these different wines that, you know, obviously are coming from around the globe, you know, pairing similar flavors, you know, varying differences, allows us to kind of showcase why these wines are different and why they have different differentiating features across the globe. And how they can work with different flavors. You know, it allows us to experiment and, you know, broaden our horizons a little bit.
Okay, great. So what are you guys going to pour next, and what are you serving with it?
So next we have a High Peaks white dry white wine from Samos. And we are going to pair that with our squash dolmades. It's a play on a traditional Greek stuffed grape leaf.
Mm-hmm.
We pair that with a little bit of orange yogurt, some fried bay, a little bit of pumpkin seed oil. And some rum raisins there as well.
That's super easy, not hard to put together at all. Okay.
No, just, Just a little bit of labor.
All right, well, we're going to get on the phone with our next guest. When we come back, I want to talk about the different glassware you brought, because it's very interesting, not the classic wine glasses. You're pouring it in very different kinds of glassware. So we'll talk about that when we get back. You want to introduce our next guest?
Sure. Paul, are you there?
I am.
Oh, good. Well, listen, it's not every day that a guy starts a blog and ends up with 200,000 hits a month and becomes a huge sensation for easy but elegant recipes and stylish crafts and entertaining and shopping tips and more. I think of you as sort of the common man's Martha Stewart. Paulo did that. He's on the phone with us right now. Paul, you started as a food stylist, and now you're an empire. How did all that happen?
Well, I don't know about empire, but yes, I started out as a food and prop stylist, actually back in Oslo, Norway, where I grew up. And then I moved here 10 years ago, and, you know, I started my Sweetpaw blog, which then turned into Sweetpaw magazine, which is a quarterly magazine, and now it's turned into Sweetpaw the Eat and Make book.
Mm-hmm. And, well, what was the process of that? I mean, when you started your blog, was it just for your own enjoyment because you wanted to put your pictures up or show people how to do things? Were you looking to educate, or you were just looking to do it for yourself?
Well, actually, I had something I called blog envy because a friend of mine, she had a blog, and, you know, she got comments and stuff, and I was thinking, oh, that looks kind of cool. I want to get comments and stuff. And then I was thinking, what am I supposed to blog about? So I came up with the idea that, you know, I'm going to blog about myself and my work, and instead of having a website, I'm gonna have a blog. And, you know, started out very small, and I still remember my first non-family comment. I was like in...
It was a big deal. It was a very big deal.
Yes, it was a really big deal. And, you know, it just slowly but surely took off, and, you know, it just turned into something really amazing.
Well, before we... Just real quick, I've always been interested in the whole idea of you know, being a food stylist, because... The rumor is that half the stuff you see, like on TV and the McDonald's commercials and in things fancier than that, isn't really food at all. It's just props because the shoot takes so long and the lights are so hot. Is that true?
Well, that's kind of like in the olden days.
He's old, so that makes sense.
That's so nice.
Sorry about that. now everything is digital, so everything goes so fast. So things isn't in front of the camera for like hours and hours. So you don't actually have to cheat anymore. So most of the stuff that you see, especially in print and books and magazines and stuff, that's real food. And on my shoots, we actually eat the food for lunch.
Oh, so nothing goes to waste, which is terrific.
No. So there's no like secret sprays or mixtures. What I use on the food is I spray it with a little water just to give it a little shine. But there's, you know, we have some tricks of the trade, but there's nothing like crazy.
Well, let's talk about the book and how it came. Well, let's talk with your magazine first. You started this quarterly magazine. I mean, that is such a terrific on-taking. What made you decide to go with something in print after being online for so long?
I just wanted to create something that was all mine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when no one told me what to do, no one could tell me that, oh, I don't like blue plates, I'm not going to use blue plates. So I just wanted to create something that I wanted to read. And it started out as an online magazine. And then after 2 years, I turned it into a print magazine. And
it all sounds so easy.
Well, it's not that easy, but, you know, it's when it's a labor of love, you don't really care how much time you spend, you know, in front of your computer or whatever, because it's something I really love and I really love doing.
Well, it's evident from the book. And let's start talking about the book, Sweetpaw, Eat and Make. It's a really, yeah. I mean, it's an interesting book for lots of reasons, but it's got recipes and crafts. And, you know, we looked at all of it. Where did the recipes come from, first of all? Are these all yours, or are they sort of an accumulated, I don't even know what you, treasure trove of recipes from, you know, friends and around
relatives.
The world.
Well,
a lot of them are actually recipes that I have from my childhood.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I grew up with two little old ladies. I grew up with my grandmother and my great aunt. And, you know, they from an early age, you know, they let me help them to cook and craft and, you know, if I wanted to make a chocolate cake, we would make a chocolate cake. And if I wanted to make pillows, we would make pillows. And everything they did was really delicious and really stylish. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the cake might have been a little lopsided and the seams went perfectly straight. But, you know, it was just wonderful. And my grandmother would always say, you know, if I said something, oh, Grandma, the cake is a little lopsided, she would say, oh, honey, perfection is boring.
Well, actually, you're like the anti-Martha Stewart. You know, you're totally. Sort of, you're very, like, your crafts, I think your crafts are fascinating. I'm not a very good craft person, but your crafts are very light and easy, and you don't ask for perfection.
No, I think I would like something, both when it comes to cooking and crafting, I like to see what the process made. If you want it to be absolutely perfect, you can go out and buy something. I like to see that someone has made it, and it also takes away a little bit from, like, the mystery about cooking and crafting. It doesn't have to be that perfect as long as it, you know, as long as it tastes really good or it's, you know, fun to look at and fun to use.
No, you're my kind of guy.
Yeah, but well, I think it's hard. I think it's hard for people to let go of that perfection. I think people who cook and do crafts, they do want it to be perfect. But I like your theory that if you want perfection, you should go out and buy it. Just like if you want to make the hardest recipe in a cookbook, you should probably go to the restaurant
and
have
it. I've got to jump. Paul, right. I've got one problem with your website, and I think we should air it in front of
yes,
our audience
absolutely.
And everybody here. You only have pictures of small dogs on
little
your
dogs.
Website. Little dogs.
What's really
that,
little dogs.
What is your problem with larger dogs, Paul? Are you an anti-dogite?
Anti-big dogite.
Oh, I love dogs. I have two French bulldogs myself, Hugo and Lestat, and they're sitting right next to me now.
Do you want to put them on the phone?
David.
No?
Yeah, they say hi.
David speaks dog. He thinks all dogs speak to him.
And the dog whisperer.
Okay.
All right. Okay. So I just wanted to hit you about that because they're all too little. That's what I think. So,
well, send, if you have a dog, send me pictures of your big dog and they'll put them on.
We will.
We do. We have 170-pound dog.
You're going to need two phones to see this picture. So let's talk. I want to go back to the book because we found a bunch of recipes in there mm-hmm. we like. But what are your, give us your two or three favorites.
Well, one of my favorites is actually something that I had to make out of, like, necessity. I had some friends coming over and what I had in my pantry was, I had some chicken thighs, and then I had capers and olives and lemon. So I threw all that together, and I put it in the oven and roasted it. And it just turned out to be the most amazing dish. You know, together with some olive oil, that sauce that you get in the pan, oh, my God. It's
that so actually good. Sounds like something I could make.
Yeah, it does. My husband doesn't cook.
Well,
I do all the cooking.
That's the thing. There's no reason for me to
this
give
is a
you
troubled marriage, isn't it?
Yeah. There's no reason for me to give you super complicated recipes that I know that you're not going to make.
Mm-hmm.
I want you to, you know, I want to make this book, I wanted to make a book that you will actually use. You know, it's really beautiful to look at, but I really want you to use the recipes. You know, that's the point.
So unfortunately, we're going to have to wrap up.
But wait,
this call.
I'm going to email you my recipe for milk and cereal. I think that's simple, and you should put it in your next book.
Okay.
Don't
water
laugh.
And
would
water
you,
is
please,
all so easy.
Don't laugh at that. Please, I have to live with that.
All right, so Paul, let's talk about quickly where we can find your magazine online and where we can buy the book.
Well, our website is sweetpaulmag.com,
mm-hmm.
and our book is sold everywhere where you know books are sold. And I'm coming to Washington soon, so.
And let us know. You'll be back in here.
Absolutely.
Yeah, please let us know when you're coming to D.C. We'd love to let people know about it, and we'd love to have you in studio.
Perfect, yes. I'm coming in actually next weekend.
Oh.
Well, come on in, man.
All right.
Why not? I got nowhere else to go. I'll be here. All right, Paul Lowe, thanks very much.
Thank you for joining us. This is David and Nikki Nellis for Foodie and the Beast. We'll be back in just a sec.
For too many parents, a baby's first steps aren't just a milestone. They're a miracle. Made possible by volunteers like you who walk in March for Babies. The money you raise funds research and local programs that help babies overcome the challenges of premature birth and birth defects. Sign up today at marchforbabies.org to take the steps that help make milestones and even miracles possible for thousands of families. Who will you march for?
This is Mark Amtower. If you're looking for cost-effective and efficient methods for marketing your products or services to the government or to other government contractors, look to LinkedIn. There are over 400,000 members in the D.C. area and more than 92 million nationwide. But only a small percentage actually use it well. I can show you how to leverage LinkedIn in ways that support your marketing, sales, and business development efforts. I do this for large and small companies, and I can do it for you. Drop me a line at mark@federaldirect.net.
Shepherd's Table, one of the area's leading organizations of providing basic human services to people without homes, will be hosting its annual fundraiser, Always Room for One More, live at the Fillmore on Sunday, March 30th from 3 to 7 p.m. Join Shepherd's Table for an afternoon of fun. Enjoy live and silent auctions, terrific food, beverages, and live entertainment. Three bands will perform, including Prefab Four, a Beatles tribute band from New York. For tickets, visit shepherdstable.com.
GovEvents.com is your one-stop shop for government and military events worldwide. With hundreds of event organizers posting their government and military-related conferences, trade shows, expos, webcasts, and more, you'll save time and energy using GovEvents to find events to attend, exhibit, or sponsor. Search for government and military events by date, location, keyword, organizer, or focus. It's free, so join today. GovEvents.com. That's GovEvents.com.
Hey, we're back on Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis, and we are talking to the guys from Flight. And you want to talk about glassware?
I do. So normally, well, when you think wine bar, you think wine, typical classic globe wine glasses. These right. are not, all your glasses are very different. They're flat bottom. They're not globe at all. So why don't you tell us why you went with these?
We're sort of following the same principle of everyday wine drinking. Again, mm-hmm. you know, when we go to these neighborhood bars in Europe, it's not, it's all stemless glasses, different glasses. These particularly are Spanish bodega glasses,
okay.
which we loved. We fell in love with on our last trip to Spain.
Mm-hmm.
The larger ones we use for by the glass wines, the smaller wines we use for our flights.
Okay.
We do carry stemmed glasses because, you know,
people are asking for them.
I mean, there are people
well,
that
I'm just curious because I think there are people who do not like wine.
Absolutely.
Not in a classic right. wine glass.
I'd say 95% of our customers are happy to drink in the bodega glasses, especially
if they just want to drink. They don't care. No,
yeah.
I'm joking. I'm joking.
But there are a few customers that like the glasses, sure.
You are a wine bar. You're going to have to get used to that. No, but I do know people who just don't enjoy, they feel like they're not getting the bouquet right. I mean, there's a lot of
right.
complaints. About it. So I'm just curious.
There are customers that feel that way. Again, for the most part, I think people are happy to drink in it, especially once they realize what we're trying to do, which is make wine part of our everyday mm-hmm. life experience. So nothing fancy. It can be, you know, you can have a glass before dinner. You can have a couple of glasses one night, come back
the next
night.
It'd be cool to do it with an intravenous unit. And then you wouldn't have to worry about what it tastes like. You just get cranked.
We'll work on that.
Not worry about rubbing crack on your forehead, right? It wouldn't matter. I'm just saying. All right.
All right, now it's time to get healthy.
All right.
Let's get healthy. Mentally and physically. Let's start over. We're starting from scratch.
All right, so are they pouring another?
We are
pouring now?
Yes,
awesome.
We have another pairing left. It's with our, we're moving back to France from Greece. It's mm-hmm. a Alsatian Pinot Gris, hint of residual sugar, super delicious. It's a Grand Cru.
Okay.
And we're going to pair it with the chef's tomato soup cake, which is a family recipe
nice.
Of his.
All right. Well,
okay,
we're
going to
change
you.
The subject. You know, when I woke up this morning, I looked in the mirror and I looked at myself and I thought, you know, for a 64-year-old guy, you look awesome, man. You look great. You look terrific.
He doesn't
and then
need
I came
any
in
help
here,
from me.
Then I met Steve Hayes and now I feel like crap because Steve Hayes, who happens to be my age, looks like Schwarzenegger looked before he went to hell. And he is the creator of the Hayes Ways Workout, and he's a health guru and a nutrition guru and a workout guru. And I wish you hadn't come in, man. You're,
and you
but
I'm
nice
really.
Smile. Look at that smile, too.
But I am so
what the hell's
glad.
The matter with you?
Stop. I'm so glad
you
you're here.
Are you hired to make me feel insignificant?
No, I'm so glad you're here. It's really, really important because David had knee replacement surgery, so his workouts, what? Little of them there were prior to the knee replacement surgery have gone out the window.
But
you're just starting up again. Let me finish. Don't
oh
be so
God.
Offended.
Wait a minute. And you're taking my pants down. That's another thought.
Okay
go
anyway,
ahead.
But, you know, I work out an awful lot. But I think it's really important to teach people how you can, A, like, get your workout, like, up again, get it moving, and how somebody who's trying to get back into working out again, like, how do you start over again?
Well, the first thing I've always said, and again, David has done that, check with your doctor, find out what's wrong, what can you do. And then next thing I do, I put you on a workout program that a lot of people don't want to use the weights. That's one thing. So
why? Why don't people? But it's so important.
I use free weights.
But I'm just saying is that a lot of people don't. But my point is that you can get a workout in without using weights. And that's one thing I developed many, many years ago.
Okay. Well, how do you do that?
Where we are right now, you have your workout station right here.
Right.
You don't have to move out of here. Push-ups, sit-ups, abs, and not only from the exercise that we're doing, it's called high intensity, where you go from a push-up to, say, you go down to the floor and do a burpee. And you're not only are you building up the muscle, but you're building up the tendons. See, people don't realize tendons are the things which connect muscle to bone. When your hip went out, really, it's the tendons. Your tendons have gotten weak.
No, his hip is next. This time is his knee.
Okay. Well, let me just say,
not before I go home and kill my wife. And let me just say that on the radio.
Yeah, but that's what it is. It's a matter of just knowing how to train, how to do a push and pull type of workout. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times when we use the weights, if we don't do the exercise correct technique, we'll end up with an injury more than a benefit.
All right, but wait, your story, if I read it right, was you were the classic 90-pound weakling. Decided not to be.
Yes.
So what did you do? I mean, did you follow the Charles Atlas way, which was big back then, or did you just do it on your own?
Well, you know, I did it on my own. I started when I was a junior in college, and it's been 42 years now. I've been
so you were 20 years old.
But you're self-taught.
Yes. Yes. That's why it's called the Hayes Way. Mm-hmm. Because, again, all the magazines that were out, as you well know, a lot of the magazines, I just couldn't get into the training of it because it didn't fit me. And I said, you know something, let me start applying what I know and what works good for me. And it worked. I mean, it really did. And I took it out with me to different organizations and showed it around. Everybody said, you know what? I thought I had to stay in the gym for an hour to work out. They said, you mean to tell me in 15 to 17 minutes I'm getting in a complete workout? I said, yes.
You can get a complete workout in 15 to 17
minutes.
Daily? Do you need to do it daily?
But you can do it. I always say 2 days on, 1 day off. But no, a workout. And as a matter of fact, I'm going to invite you guys to work out with me.
I would love that. So let me ask you a question. How would you take I would love to work out with him, but we're at very different levels. So how would you take a couple like
hubba
us?
Hubba.
And how would you?
You know, I want to say I tried to work out with her last night and nothing happened. Now I know it will. Sorry, Steve.
Nothing happened for me. Let's just make that clear. Nothing happened for me. Okay.
She was working out the TV clicker. Don't be embarrassed. It's a family show.
No. What I would do is say, you know, as you were saying, both of you would do what I would call my high intensity workout. It's called HIIT, high intensity training. So what each one of you would do the same exercise, and not only that, but you would push each other because it wouldn't be a competition. It would be a thing.
We're a little competitive.
Yeah, well, but again, it would be such a thing where it would be motivational. Whereas you say, hey, watch me do this and see how effective it is, and it inspires him to go right along with it. I have a lot of couple trainings in my.
Now, how different is it based on age? Because Nikki's much older than I am.
Age has nothing to do with it. Do you realize this? A study showed that as we get older, our bodies, instead of losing muscle mass, if we train, we would gain as much muscle mass, say, from our seniors, our baby boomers, from there on up, as a younger person would who's starting to train in a gym.
So I can still get ripped?
Oh, ripped. Awesome. Ripped from the hips, buddy.
Let's go. Let's get it on. Let's do it.
So what are the kinds of, trends now? You know, I think you're hearing a lot about, you know, gyrotonics and Pilates and kettlebells. I mean, what are the things that you find are the most helpful for people in working out? Like, what are you using now that works for you?
Interval training. Interval training.
Okay.
You want to be in and out of a gym in 30 minutes or work out in 30 minutes. And I'm telling you, there's no reason why you should be in there for longer than, say, no longer than 30, 35
minutes.
See,
no, but mentally for me,
yes,
I feel like I have to do 45 minutes of cardio. I do 45 minutes of cardio and then 30 minutes of weights. And you're telling me that's not necessary?
Well, I'll give you a classic example. Say, for instance, if you were to train with me on the cardio, I'd take you out and we'd do sprints. And I would guarantee you in 10 minutes of sprinting would feel like you've done 4 hours of cardio.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
It's because you're maximum
I'm in. Let's
explosion.
Do it. Okay.
Maximum explosion. The body's exploding. And I'm waiting for
And
David.
That's what you're saying. So when you say intervals, are you doing 2 minutes on, 1 minute off? Like, what? How are you doing intervals?
Okay, the interval training is just as I was saying. We would do, say, for instance, we go for a push-up.
Mm-hmm.
And then next thing you know, we go for, say, a 10-second sprint.
Okay.
Remember 100-meter sprint in the Olympics?
Mm-hmm.
10 seconds. 10 seconds of maximum burn. And let me tell you something. You'll find your body contouring and shaping up in a matter of, oh, my God, in a matter of weeks.
So really? Where do you do this? Do you have a studio somewhere? Do you go to people's homes? How does it work?
I go to people's homes. I go out to the parks. I take them out to the parks.
So you're like the sergeant's program.
Yes, in a sense, but it's the
but
haze
way. But it's
the
haze way.
Well, I know, in other words, out there they're using whatever's in the park or in whatever, you know, if there's a chin-up bar or whatever,
yes.
But it's not, you're not having free weights and there are no machines and
no.
There are no cross trainers and any of that
Absolutely
stuff.
Not. And you and I'm telling you, that's what I was just saying. This type of workout, my type of workout strengthens tendons. When you have tendons, everything else becomes icing on the cake. Remember, two things, strong tendons, strong in the abs, there's nothing that you can't do. Absolutely.
And you're 64 years old?
Yes.
I hate you.
Now,
I love
about,
you, but
what
I hate
about,
you.
Do you do any work with children or teens?
Oh, yes.
So how are you, because, you know, with the obesity epidemic, I mean, kids are not getting nearly the kinds of activity that they used to unless they play a sport. How do you take, like, for example, we have five children, but one of our sons particularly, he's not athletic. So how do you help a kid like that?
And I'll tell you what I just said before, the Hayes Way DVD, no excuses. That's a family DVD.
Okay.
It makes your kids say, God, look what mom and dad are doing. Hey, I'm going to try that. That looks fun. And you're having mm-hmm. fun while you're working out. And as far mm-hmm. as the nutrition is concerned, I tell them all the time, I say, look, there's nothing wrong with greens, fish, chicken, things like that, lean protein. Yes.
Well, that's mm-hmm. pretty much what we...
I mean, we do that. We do.
Get rid of the cookies. All right, so we've only got about 15 seconds left. I want to know people to know how to find you. I guess we want to know how to find you,
right.
too, but go ahead.
Go to thehayesway.com.
H-A-Y-E-S.
Yes, the Hayes, thehayeswaywy.com, or you can follow Facebook at The Hayes Way.
Excellent. Thank you so much. That was
right.
Terrific.
I wish
Thank
this
you.
Was TV, because if you could see Steve,
we'll take a picture of you.
You'd be online already.
Right, exactly.
Well, thank
take
you.
His picture and tell him it's me. We'll Photoshop
We'll Photoshop. I'm going to do a little
Man, look
Photoshop.
At David. David, he's ripped and not from the wine. All right, so now we're going to switch subjects, and we're
okay.
going to talk about the reading connection. Oh, yeah, we are.
The
we're
reading
talk-
connection.
All right, so... Just to recap, the Reading Connection is an organization, it's a nonprofit that works to improve the lives of at-risk kids by introducing them to literature and the wonderful worlds of, you know, fact and fantasy that are out there. Courtney Kissel is the executive director. She's back with us. She's brought in Michael Mueller. Is it Mueller or Mueller?
Either way works, I think.
No, what
is it
properly?
Let's do Mueller.
Mueller, okay. I'm international, baby. He is the assistant manager at Arrow Wine and Spirits, and they're talking about the April 4th fundraiser that is of Wine and Words.
Mm-hmm.
We've got about a minute before we go to commercial, but why don't you give us the fast 411 on the event?
And then we'll come back.
Yeah.
Sure, yeah. So thank you for having us again. We are celebrating our 25th anniversary of the Reading Connection.
Which is amazing.
It is. We're really excited. So this year, we're actually having the event at the Jones Day Rooftop Terrace. I'm not sure if you all have been there, but it's gorgeous,
Mm-mm.
beautiful, stunning views of the Capitol. It's going to be 70 degrees and sunny, so
right.
cherry blossoms will be blooming. It'll be lovely.
Mm-hmm.
So the event is, we've actually underwritten the event already. All the money that's raised that evening is going directly to our programs to reach more children in our 25th year.
Fantastic. Okay, when we come back, we're going to find out more about the event and more about the Reading Connection so people can get involved. And we're going to get a little more wine because we haven't had enough. This is David and Nikki Nellis
with
Foodie and the Beast. We'll be right back.
NASA needs men and women like you to participate in a program that helps study the physical changes an astronaut might encounter during microgravity conditions of spaceflight. Currently, a countermeasure and functional testing study is being done within the heads-down tilt bedrest program called CFT-70. For more information on participating in the CFT-70 program, contact the Johnson Space Center's Human Test Subject Facility at 1-866-JCS-TEST. Or visit thebedreststudy.com.
Are you ready to race for impact? Are you ready to race for the cure? Join Susan G. Komen Global Race for the Cure this Mother's Day weekend on the National Mall. Saturday, May 10th marks the 25th anniversary of the Susan G. Komen Global Race for the Cure events in Washington, D.C.
With fun for the whole family, including a race just for kids, everyone can help fund life-saving breast cancer screenings, treatment, and more. Register today at globalraceforthecure.org. That's globalraceforthecure.org.
At UPS, we take two things very seriously, your budget and our planet. It's why we've built one of the largest alternative fuel fleets in the industry. It's why we offer eco-responsible services like carbon-neutral shipping and carbon impact analysis. It's also why businesses trust UPS to provide customized solutions that cut costs and boost productivity. UPS is committed to helping you operate more efficiently and sustainably. Learn more at ups.com/gov.
This is Mark Amtower. If you're looking for cost-effective and efficient methods for marketing your products or services to the government or to other government contractors, look to LinkedIn. There are over 400,000 members in the D.C. area and more than 92 million nationwide, but only a small percentage actually use it well. I can show you how to leverage LinkedIn in ways that support your marketing, sales, and business development efforts. I do this for large and small companies, and I can do it for you. Drop me a line at mark@federaldirect.net.
Hey, we're back on Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis, and we're talking about the big Reading Connection fundraiser that's coming up on April 4th. And, let's keep going. Tell me about, you've got a big silent auction. I know that as well.
We do. Yeah. We have some really fun things this year in the auction. We have box suites available for the Nats. We have wine classes. We have trips to New York. Some really fun date nights here in the district. So we're really excited.
I could use a fun date night.
With who?
You. Somebody.
Well, so you brought in Era Wine today. Tell us how you guys partnered up together and how Era Wine is participating with the Reading Connection.
Sure. So we were founded 25 years ago in Arlington, Virginia, mm-hmm. and Era Wine was also about 20-plus years old, also in Arlington. So we thought it was a really natural fit for us to work with somebody who had the history. Mm-hmm. And they have been so phenomenal. We gave them the menu, so we're having eight participating restaurants at the night, and mm-hmm. we're pairing the food with the wine from Arrow. So they've been, Arrow Wine's been fantastic about getting our lists and pairing it appropriately.
So, Michael, did you pick the wines?
I did. Yeah.
And so what'd you pick?
Well, we picked a couple of whites and a couple of reds. We wanted to keep it not too eclectic, since mm-hmm. it's a large group of attendees. So we are sticking with what are a little bit more well-known grape varietals. What you have in front of you is a delightful Pinot Noir. From
it's very nice.
It's really good.
It's from California. It's a second label of a winery that is a boutique winery in Sonoma. And so it's affordable, too. Mm-hmm. You know, California wine is expensive, and it is nice to have a Pinot Noir that is well-balanced, which is what we are all about in the wines that we seek out and that match the food very well.
Do you feel like Pinot Noir, do you think because of like the movie a couple of years ago and then everybody started ordering it, do you think it's like on a decline? Sort of like, you know how Chardonnay was really hot for a while and then yeah. Merlot was really hot. Has Pinot lost its luster?
Chardonnay is horrible.
No. Chardonnay is not horrible. Friend, you just don't like California Chardonnay.
Well, I would say this, you know, I think Pinot Noir is still one of the most attractive grape varieties out mm-hmm. there. I think, you know, it's an interesting grape. It's fickle. It's difficult to grow. And so it tends to be a little bit more expensive than mm-hmm. other varieties. But I don't think it's lost its cachet at all.
Okay.
And now that we know from a recent study that, our nose can actually detect 100,000 times more scents than previously assumed.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of the more fragrant red grapes, too. So,
very true.
All right. Unfortunately, because of time, I want to get back. Do you mind?
Yes, no.
Back to Courtney, because
absolutely.
We haven't really talked about the Reading Connection and what your geographic reach is and how many kids and families you're working with, and I think that's important for people to hear.
Great, thank you. So we are in the D.C. metropolitan area. We're in Virginia, D.C., and actually in our 25th year, we're expanding into Maryland, into Montgomery County.
Mm-hmm.
And we reach about 1,500 children a year, distributing about 12,000 new books.
So are you in the schools? How do you work?
We work
them?
In homeless shelters, transitional housing, affordable housing complexes in the region.
Okay.
So unfortunately, there's not, we're still seeing a need. You know?
What's the range of the literature? I mean, do you?
Yeah, we work with kids as young as infants going up to teenagers.
Mm-hmm.
So we actually promote reading to babies when you're pregnant, right? The importance of that, and then just continuing that and reading aloud, really building that literacy and language development by reading aloud to your child.
And how do you work with the individuals? How do you help? What's the process?
Right. So we have volunteers that come into the shelters on a weekly basis, and mm-hmm. they read aloud to children. Okay. So very easy.
So it's like a reading corner, mm-hmm. and yep. the kids come in and sit down.
Exactly. There's usually about, 5 to 10 kids. Mm-hmm. There's teams of volunteers that go in. We go in on a weekly basis and read aloud to children. Volunteers' commitments only once a month. So it's really a very easy thing for people to do.
So are you looking? Are you always looking for volunteers? How can people, other than participating in this event at the end of the week, how else can people get involved and help out?
Yes. So since we're going to be expanding into Montgomery County, mm-hmm. we're going to be looking for volunteers in Montgomery County. So if there's anyone there, we'd love that. Also,
can high school kids do this? Is this something? How old do you have to be to participate?
You do have to be 18. 18 okay. and over.
That's good yep. to know.
High school kids can get involved in other ways, though. We are always looking. We're distributing books, right, on a weekly basis. Mm-hmm. So if they do book drives for us, that's a really, really great way for them.
Okay, that's great to know.
Yeah.
Terrific.
Web address.
www.thereadingconnection.org.
Okay, great. And so, Michael, just quickly, just give us a little, because we didn't get to talk about Erewhine, just give us a little 411 on it.
Oh, sure. Well, we are, first and foremost, incredibly proud that the Reading Connection chose to partner with us for this event. And as Courtney said, we are fellow Arlington-based organizations. I now work for Erewhine and Spirits, which is a new small shop that we recently opened in D.C. in downtown, right mm-hmm. at the intersection of Foggy Bottom and the West End. And, okay. We are just very happy that we are able to work with Courtney and her Food and Wine chair, Shakti, who has been wonderful. And their enthusiasm for the cause is incredibly infectious.
All right. We'll go to thereadingconnection.org to get information about the event. There's still some tickets left, right?
And what is the address for Erewhine?
Erewhine.com.
Excellent. Okay. Thank you both so much.
All right. We want to go back and talk to the folks from Flight. Before we do, I just want to thank quickly the folks that support and sponsor the show. Always my favorite, the Georgetown Bagel Bakery. Best bagels. We've been eating their bagels every Sunday for 6.5 years.
I know.
Which could account for my waistline. People at Neighborhood Restaurant Group, Rustico, Evening Star, Tallulah Vermilion, Buzz Bakery, Iron Gate, Columbia Firehouse, Birch and Barley, and Church Key, where Sam Nellis works. Mm-hmm. The Black's Restaurant Group, Early Mountain Vineyard down in Madison, Virginia, the American Lamb Board, and our friends at the Virginia Wine Board. Let's get back to Flight. So you guys came from different worlds. You came from Wall Street, and you were an attorney. Is that right?
That is correct,
well,
yes.
How did that happen? Were you out drinking one night? And
like I said, we'd always thought we would do this, but we figured we'd spend 10, 20 years in our careers and then do it. And I got sick. We had to sort of restructure our lives. And that's when we decided that life is short and we're going to go ahead and live our dream right now.
So when you were coming up with the idea for the wine bar, I know you wanted people to have easy access. You didn't want people to be afraid of wine.
Right.
But how did you go about curating the kind of wines that you selected?
Our goal was really, again, to find gems in the wine world. It's so huge and difficult to navigate, and we believe there are quality, affordable wines mm-hmm. out there within well-known regions like France, Spain, and Italy, but also focusing in on lesser-known regions like the Balkans and Greek wines, mm-hmm. and then also on varietals.
We had a Bulgarian wine. That Bulgaria, what is it, Bulgariana? Bulgariana?
There's some good wines coming out of there, yeah.
Yeah, we had a winemaker from Bulgaria, and it was fascinating.
Right.
And India. We had a winemaker from India in, too. There are wines being made all around the world.
There are great wines being made all around the world.
What about Virginia wines? Are you guys carrying a lot of them?
We have two on the list right now, and they're the higher-end wines mm-hmm. for our
Who
wine list. So we've got the Octagon from Barbersville and the RDV Lost Mountain and Rendezvous.
Two very big ones.
We are looking for more wines from Virginia.
Now, do you guys have wines on tap? How do you go about preserving your wines?
We don't have wines on tap. So everything's by the bottle right now. We use a argon gas system to preserve our wines.
Mm-hmm.
We're also kickstarting a curated wine list for where we use the Coravin. So that's going to be the higher-end wines, some Burgundy, some Bordeaux, and again, going back to the lesser-known regions, but high-quality wines that we'll use the Coravin on.
All right.
Terrific. Well, wait, I just want to bring Bradley in for one second.
Okay, yeah. This is
Can
delicious.
We talk about your tomato soup cake?
Absolutely.
It's so delicious. I mean, are people put off by the name?
I think it kind of surprises some people. It's not a, necessarily a cake that you see around a lot.
No.
But, I mean, back – ultimately, it's an older recipe. I got this recipe from my grandmother who had gotten it from her mother-in-law. And
where in New England are you from?
I grew up in southern Maine.
Okay.
Okay.
So this recipe was passed down, obviously, through my family, and it's actually pretty common in New England. I mean, I grew up every birthday.
So
my grandmother
like
made this for me.
Something you would see, like, you know, in, like, one of the farmer's cookbooks, you know, from, like, the 1800s?
It's actually the recipe that I use currently, which was submitted by my grandmother and some local ladies in the area. It was actually a club cookbook put together by the housewives of community in Massachusetts.
I love that.
So
why don't
it
you
is,
have an accent? You can't get there from here.
Well, you can. You know, every once in a while, we'll go out and catch a wicked pizza there, Bob. Don't worry.
All right. Well, unfortunately, we're coming to the end of the show.
We are.
Everything you guys out there
well,
heard.
Well, wait. Let Flight tell everybody where they are.
What do you mean where they are? Oh, yeah, where Flight is.
Right. We're located on 6th and 8th Streets Northwest in Chinatown.
Fantastic. Great.
And if we had neglected to do that, you could have gone to the list, areyouonit.com, to find out that and find out everything else that's going on in the food and wine world around D.C. You can also follow Nikki on Twitter and Facebook and on WTOP 103.5 FM at 1250 today and on Thursday at
1210. You should know it because you call me at 1210 every Thursday.
I'm at work. Someone has to work.
On air.
That's it.
That I'm is done. It. Do you want to hear who's on next week?
Yeah, well, I guess. Sure.
We have a great show next week. I mean, we had a great show this week. We always have a good show. But next week, we got Vic Albisu coming in studio.
Vic.
And Doran Peterson is also coming in. And they're doing a huge restaurant challenge in Ballston. They're going to come in, tell us all about it. You could actually get your own restaurant. They're going to come in with some of their applicants. And lastly, as a huge Le Creuset fan, we have the company Le Creuset coming in. They're coming in with their new spring line. We're going to get cooking in studio.
You get their attention.
Yeah, you'll steal them because they're expensive. All right. This is David and Nikki Nellis for Foodie and the Beast. Thank you all. We had a great show today.
Yeah, you
Thank you, everybody,
great.
For
Thank
joining
you.
Us. Everybody, please have a delicious week.